This week's episode of Still Entitled is made possible by Netgear. When's the last time you upgraded your home's Wi-Fi? Turn your Wi-Fi up a notch with Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers. Whether you're gaming online or watching Netflix in 4K, it's like giving your streaming the VIP treatment. You'll enjoy buffer-free streaming and zero lag no matter how many devices are connected to your network. Upgrade your router at netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Again, netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Make your Wi-Fi feel young again. Now on with the show. Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. This is Norm letting you know this week we have a very special episode. This past weekend, the Tested crew was at Bay Area Maker Faire. And as is tradition, Adam spent Sunday morning giving his annual Sunday sermon. And that's what this episode will be devoted to. So please enjoy.
I feel like Diana Ross in Central Park. That's an old reference. Hello, Maker Faire! Hello, Makers! You guys are so awesome for coming out in the rain. Holy hell, I want one of these so badly. Oh my gosh, I'm so, so excited to see you guys and to be here. I don't know how many years I've been doing this now at Maker Faire, but each year I've talked about some aspect of my experience or some aspect of the maker experience, the internal exercise of making. And this is an important conversation to me because when we make stuff, when we desire to achieve a thing, and really making is so much more than just putting physical objects together. This is the crowd that knows that deeper than most anybody. Making is anytime you use your point of view to bring something extant out of you into the world. And when you do that, you become a contributor to your culture. We become part of our culture by doing that, by sharing our experience, by recapitulating the world through our bodies, through our hands, through our voices, through dancing, whatever it is that you are doing. When you're doing something from nothing, you are making. And sharing my experience is really important to me. I believe what Emerson said, that to know that what is true for you in your secret heart is true for everybody. And each of our individual experiences are universal. And the more we share them, the more we understand each other. But this year, I wanted to talk about outward facing. I wanted to talk about, instead of the internal experience of making, I wanted to share some experiences about facing outwards and looking at the people around you rather than the internal experience. When I was touring around the country visiting makerspaces for the Obama administration to help raise awareness of what makerspaces were being challenged by around the country, how they were solving problems, I visited this amazing place, the Elizabeth Forward School outside of Pittsburgh, where they had gotten a makerspace. They had been given a bunch of 3D printers, and one teacher had been put in charge, and she didn't know how to use any of the 3D printers. So she built a curriculum with her class where they figured out the makerspace together. And then they went to a local old folks home where each of the young women in this school program was paired with a resident of the home, and they spent a semester iterating a product for the person they were paired with, some way in which to make their life and their experience deeper of the world. It could be something as simple as something that helped them hold on to the remote better, or something that allowed them to reach something in the house. But what was really important about this exercise was that each student was outwardly facing. They weren't just solving a problem for themselves. They were interacting with another human being. And in that interaction, there is so much positive, and there is also so much vulnerability, which means there's the potential for the negative. And unless we understand the responsibility of those interactions, we can harm each other. We can harm each other unintentionally. I have said over the years that one of the things that, hey, it's one of my bags. Hi. Oh, it's Norm. Hi, Norm. over the years, the people that really moved me, the early people that moved me in addition to my family were the teachers. I had a teacher in fifth grade, Miss Levine, who found a New Yorker comic And she gave it to me, and she said, I'm giving this to you for a very specific reason. And the comic was of a little boy in a classroom, probably about my age, and his back was to the blackboard, and he was looking very much like he was not going to look at the blackboard. And the teacher said, Harold, just because you can do the work doesn't mean you don't have to. Now, Miss Levine was seeing me so clearly. She saw the level of entitlement in me. She saw that I thought that being clever was enough, something I didn't learn the other side of until I was in my 20s, and I'd wasted a lot of people's time. Because being clever is not enough. The world is packed with clever people who haven't gone anywhere, and it's jam-packed with idiots who are rich beyond your wildest imagination. In my freshman year in high school, I had a teacher, Dan Frayer, was my earth science teacher. In addition to giving great insights into science by building wonderful stories about the physics of earth science, Dan Frayer gave us things like, the best way to understand a glacier is that it's a river on Quaaludes. From a physics perspective, that is one of the most beautiful definitions of a river, of a glacier I've ever heard. Dan gave us that story. He gave us the facts about a glacier in context and gifted us this story that helped us understand it. But even more than that, Dan provided me a place to actually come and ask questions. So this is 1980-ish. I'm 14 years old. I did not have a lot of friends. I didn't know what to do at lunch. And so I would gravitate towards Dan's classroom. He would be spending lunch hours grading papers. Here's how long ago it was. He was smoking in the classroom. Yeah, in the 80s and the 70s, nobody was paying attention. He would be smoking and grading papers, and I would ask questions like, hey, when I flick a candle flame with my fingers and I snap it through the candle flame, it makes a popping sound. And then he spent like 40 minutes with me actually wondering aloud how this worked and why it worked. Maybe it was a release of gases. The answer about why it happens isn't as important as the fact that he gave me this incredible gift of listening to me and offering me his opinion and saying, I don't know. But most of all, what I felt from him in that moment was I felt seen as a fellow human being, not as a student, not as someone who was taking up his time, but he saw me as a human being. 2 years later, well, actually, Dan Frayer said a phrase in earth science which rocked my world. He said, when a star is collapsing just before it becomes a black hole, it collapses to be so dense that the atoms and electrons and protons and neutrons can't move any further and there's no more space. And just before it collapses, space disappears inside there. And thus, when there's no space, there's no time. And I was like, no space, no time? I don't understand. And I spent 2 years sort of rattling that around in my head. And 2 years later, I'm in my junior year. I'm taking chemistry. I'm failing chemistry. And my chemistry teacher, Nicholas Dimitrios Zimopoulos, is going through some chemistry mathematics, and I am bored out of my mind. And I'm staring at the clock like you do in a classroom, and I'm watching the second hand just like, and I'm thinking, that is such an imprecise way to measure time. This big, long aluminum handle moving at this gross movement. And I started to think about this, and I started to think, well, right, what is a clock but a ruler for time? Right, it's a ruler, it's a circular ruler, and it's measuring something. Oh, wait, if it's a ruler, what is it measuring? Oh, I realized instantly in this 1 second that what it's measuring is movement. It's not just measuring the random time. It's measuring things that change over time. And at that second, I understood what Dan Frayer had said 2 years earlier in earth science, that when there's nothing to measure because nothing can move, then by definition, there is no time. And at this point, the expression on my face had caught the attention of my teacher. And he said, Adam, do you want to share with the rest of the class what is going on inside your head? And I did. I told him that thing, and we spent the rest of the class talking about the physics of time. And the takeaway for me was not what I learned about time. It was, again, that this teacher had the time and the mental wherewithal and the kindness and generosity to see me for where I was and approach me and treat me like a fellow traveler. He was figuring this out and expressing the limits of his knowledge at the same moments that I was. Now, I've had other experiences in the making of things. Early on in my maker life, I was probably in my early 20s, and I decided to give a gift to somebody. And in fact, I didn't make a gift for them. I offered them a gift for their house. I said, you've gotten a new house. I'd like to make, I've been welding. I'd like to make a kitchen rack or a pot holder or something that you need for your kitchen with this new skill I have. And they didn't respond for several weeks. And when I finally brought it up to them again, they said, actually, I don't want that gift, they said. And I was a little shocked. And I said, why? And they said, well, when you make me something, it's all about you. And they said, you could just buy me like a mug or a picture frame or something. And I was really hurt by that. I was really like laid low by this. And I hadn't realized that when I was reaching out to offer them something, that I was, in fact, at that moment, making myself vulnerable to them, that I was laying myself bare. I was offering this time and this creativity of mine, and they were rejecting it out of hand. I hadn't expected, and it was surprising to me that in that interaction, when I opened up, I found a closed door, and I found that really, really upsetting. And hold on, I have to check my notes because I've made a bunch of notes this morning and I've lost my place just a little bit. Hang on, and it's raining. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Where are we at? Happiness. Right, okay. So my wife was telling me this morning about a Harvard happiness study in which they asked a whole bunch of young people what would make them truly happy. And literally, like, half of the respondents said being rich or famous would make them happy. Aside from the rich part, aside from the famous part, it turns out that over the many years of this happiness study, which has been going on for a tremendous amount of time, what actually made people happy, what actually increased their happiness, was the quality and the depth of the relationships they had with the people around them, their partners, their family, their friends, their community. And that is what I wanted to talk about this, about the outward facing of making.
Hey, everybody, before we continue, I want to let you know that Still Entitled this week is also made possible by TripleByte, because applying to programming jobs sucks. You have to put in the right keywords in your resume, you spend hours and hours on phone screens and take-home projects, and that's assuming the company even responds to your application. Well, if you're a software engineer, TripleByte can help. They work with over 400 top tech companies, from big names like Dropbox and Adobe to exciting startups. You do one brief online interview with them, and if you do well, you get to go straight to final interviews with the companies on their platform. It's like the common app for software engineers. TripleByte does not look at your resume or where you went to school. All they care about is if you can code, because that's what really matters. You are not just your credentials, a piece of paper, or a web profile. You are your ability. Apply now at triplebyte.com/untitled. Again, that's TripleByte, B-Y-T-E, byte as in 8 bits. And as a special offer for listeners of the show, if you take a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus. Now back to the conversation.
I hate phrases like this, and yet I'm saying it. In my new book, Every Tool's a Hammer, I have a whole chapter on sharing. And sharing is so important to me, not just sharing your work and sharing your tools, but sharing a whole list of things. Sharing your experience. That's what I've been doing here over the past 10, 11, 12 years, sharing my experience with you in hopes that there's something that's useful. And as I hear backstories from you guys about the stuff that you've learned or stuff that you found inspiring or stuff that you disagreed with, I've learned more about myself. I've learned more about the process that I go through. Sharing your curiosity, telling people the things that you're interested in, and not just, forgive me, when I say mansplaining, understand I am the origin story of my mansplaining. I'm a recovering mansplainer. And by mansplaining, I mean taking up someone's time to express something that I don't necessarily know deeply, but I love having the right answer. Boy, am I addicted to having the right answer. But I have come to realize at this part of my life that it's more important to be listening to the limits of my own knowledge and also listening to what the person in front of me might have to contribute. Sharing your techniques. This is not a crowd that needs to hear this, but it is really important that when we come up with something new or novel that we share it with others. That technique you've come up with, that's not your bread and butter. That's not your livelihood. That's just an offshoot of your ingeniousness. And when you share it with somebody else, you're going to get more power back from the additions and the modifications and the suggestions that come back to you about the very techniques that you've been sharing. Sharing your enthusiasm, expressing the things that you love. Now, on the flip side of that, we live in this culture where everyone's got a hot take on something. And the singular rule for any maker here is, of course, don't read your own damn comments. And why do we say that? Because people out in the world can be colossally shitty. Now, that I think is worth a curse. I think it's worth cursing even in front of the children. Because listen, it's cool when adults curse. It's really gross when children do. But that's worth a curse. Because the fact that we expose ourselves and people out there can be really crappy is really bad. There's an ethos in Los Angeles, which I want you to know about. Los Angeles is, of course, an entire city devoted almost singularly to the industry of making movies. And when you're in Los Angeles and you're hanging out with people who live in Los Angeles, you'll find people a lot more circumspect about expressing opinions about movies and directors and actors. And they're doing this because they swim in the water with all of these directors and actors and writers and filmmakers. And they've also been in the trenches. Every one of us who's worked in the film industry has worked on great films, but has also worked mostly on really terrible films. And we didn't put any less love into those terrible films. We worked really hard. We called it turd polishing. Because sometimes you put all your heart into something and it still makes a movie like one of the Matrix sequels. And you're like, oh, I wish it was better. But the fact is, it's really hard to make a good thing. It's really hard to make anything. And so, like, if this thing didn't move as fast as you wanted it to, would you call it a piece of garbage? But we so readily do that with movies and with television, and we're not thinking about the ways in which the people that worked on that production worked really hard to make it as good as they can. And sharing your enthusiasm means giving that enthusiasm to people and giving them the benefit of the doubt for the thing that they have built, for the thing that they've put their heart and their time and their energy into. Sharing your opportunities. I will tell you that you get any sort of little bit of notoriety and opportunities start showing up all over the place. And it's really hard to know which ones to take advantage of. But it's also, you find yourself having to spread those opportunities around. And I cannot tell you the joy of being able to take an opportunity that has come to me and passing it on to somebody else and seeing what they do with it. You will get many opportunities in your life. There are times you will not take advantage of those opportunities because it's not the right time, place, part of your life to do that. I exhort you to spread that opportunity around to someone else, to see if you can find someone else that can fulfill that task. Because when I am able to put two people together for a project that I don't necessarily have anything to do with, it pleases me so greatly. And it is such a gift to be able to give. And lastly, sharing the credit. We live in this society that is addicted to fame, and it is addicted to the idea of the singular creator. And I think this crowd, again, more than almost any other that I ever talk to, deeply understands that none of us does any of this alone. We are all supported by a mountain of people in order to explore the weird, wonderful, strange, indefensible yet vital hobbies that we all have. And we have those, and we get to explore those because of the people that have supported us, because of the people that encourage us. Here's another story. I'm quite well known for having replicated the Blade Runner gun at least half a dozen times. The first time when I was 18, and I made it out of some model parts over about 3 months in my friend's apartment in Hell's Kitchen, New York. And then in the early 90s, I got hired by Jamie Hyneman into the commercial television industry, specifically special effects, and my skills really increased. And after a couple of years of working for Jamie, I realized, oh, I've got some new skills. Maybe I could tackle the Blade Runner gun again. And so I started scratch building from this reference I had gotten from Heroes World up on Clement Street. And this was, again, a months-long process, probably 2.5 months of just sanding small parts really, really precisely. And at that time, I had a really close friend. We were the kind of close friend that you're talking to like 2 or 3 times every single day. Like that, you're just almost living with this person even though they have a different apartment. And he had said to me, halfway through this Blade Runner gun project, hey, I think that thing you're doing is really neat. I think it's really awesome. And I can barely describe to you how uplifting it was to hear this friend of mine encourage me to do this thing that I was doing. Now, I know that you all have friends and you love them, but I wonder if you're telling them enough that you support what they're doing. Because when you do, when someone in your life that's not necessarily related to you tells you that what you're doing is really cool, it gives you so much more energy. And there's endless amounts of it if you go looking for it with heart, I swear. It's really important to me as an employer, but also as a friend and a colleague, to tell the people around me when I think what they're doing is amazing and how exactly I think it's amazing. Because we all need that encouragement from time to time. Oh, let's see here. Sharing the credit, listening. Yes, listening to each other. Okay. So lastly, this is the last part of my speech, and then I'm going to take questions from this wet and dedicated audience. We are in a difficult situation, both politically, I don't care what side of the aisle you sit on, you're probably freaking out, and also environmentally. There's articles in magazines about life extension. I'm not sure if that's the limiting factor anymore. It might be what we've done to this planet. But if we make this out, if we make it out of this time, both politically and environmentally, if we make it out, the only way we're going to make it out is because we have listened to each other. The only way we're going to see a path clearly is to see how different each of our experiences of the world are. And the difference is really marked. I can't even describe to you. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, a guy who's handicapped is just like me, except he's got wheels. What you don't understand is that that handicapped person lives in a world that is fundamentally different than the world you live in. It has different rules. It has different parameters. Every one of their days doesn't grid onto one of yours at all. Of course, there's a lot of commonality, but it's the differences that you might not understand. And you might not understand looking around at your neighbors and the people that you're in the shop with and the people that you're in the movies with and the people you interact with, your neighbors, that many of them live in fundamentally different Americas than you might. And to be able to see that and to see their experience and to understand how different it is the first step towards realizing how we can heal these differences between us. Because again, I don't care what side of the aisle you sit upon, the differences between us right now and the lack of our acknowledgement is killing us individually, personally, from a community standpoint, and it's killing our planet. And until we can address this, we're all going to burn up on this thing together. And we can't do that. We can't allow that. So that's my Sunday sermon today. Listen to each other. Try and understand each other's experience and fill that space with love. I love you guys.
Thanks for listening this week. And before we head out, I wanted to remind you that Still Entitled is made possible this week with support from TripleByte, because applying to programming jobs sucks. From endless applications to countless hours of technical screens, with TripleByte, there's a better way. You do one online interview, then you get to go straight to final interviews at hundreds of companies, from tech giants like Dropbox to exciting startups. It's like the common app for software engineers. There's no resume needed. Whew. Apply now at TripleByte.com/untitled. And if you take a job through TripleByte, they'll offer you a $1,000 signing bonus. TripleByte, BYTE.com/untitled. We'll see you next week.